Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Most teenagers go to great lengths to be different from their parents. But my next guest embraced the idea of following in his mother's footsteps. I'll be talking with Giuliano Hazan today on A Taste of the Past. Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, here on heritageradionetwork.org. And today, I'm going to be talking with Giuliano Hazan. Giuliano is the only son of Marcella Hazan. Marcella being, for those of you who aren't aware, the iconic Italian cookbook author and, for many of us, instructor. She actually really brought to me brought Italian food more to the table for me. I had been living in Italy for 5 years, and when I moved back to the U.S. in 1973, she was the only person I could find who really wrote books that about food the way that I ate in Italy, in Rome, in northern Italy particularly. And I continued to follow her and read her books. And then, lo and behold, along came Giuliano. And Giuliano, at age 17, he began working as an assistant in his mother's renowned school of classic Italian cooking. He committed himself to mastering the simple, genuine flavors of Italian cuisine. And now, more than three decades later, Giuliano is an author, teacher, entrepreneur, and one of the foremost authorities on Italian cooking. Welcome, Giuliano.
Well, thank you very much, Linda. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, what I initially had thought to talk about, when I saw your new book come out, and I'm going to tell the listeners about that, and I saw your new book come out. It's called Hazan Family Favorites, and I'm reading about it, and I'm thinking, oh, that's so nice. It's family meals, and it's family favorites, obviously from sitting down with his mother and father at dinner, and I thought, this is a topic that's been kind of needling away at me because I'm concerned about the erosion of the family meal. So I said, well, great, let's do a show on the importance of the family meal. Then I got to reading the book and I said, whoa, let's just do a show about passing down the baton and teaching kids how to cook and learning all the great things. You've got it all in this book, and the book is called Hazan Family Favorites, as I said. It's a book filled with wonderful recipes, but as one reviewer wrote, it's not so much a book of Italian recipes as it is a book about Giuliano's family with food as its parallel plot line. And I thank you for writing this book, number one.
And thank you.
And secondly, what are your feelings on the family meal today? You just posted a piece in Zester Daily about this as well, and I was so pleased to see that because it was, you know, the topic of today's show. That there is definitely, and has been, I think, for the past couple generations, an erosion of the family meal.
Yes, I think there has, and part of it may be that everybody's lives are just getting busier. And so it's easy, I guess, to let, you know, making sitting down and eating together an important part of the day's schedule that you're not willing to give up.
And not
often,
sick, no, not
often
sick
the
kids.
That gets given up.
Right.
You know,
and not
first.
Sick the kids in front of the television, right?
You know. And, oh, even worse, yes. And, you know, of course, food was a very important part of my life always. My father, as my mother said, you know, could put up with a lot of things, but not a bad meal. And so when my mother and my father got married, that's actually when my mother really started thinking about cooking. Before that, she was perfectly happy with a mortadella sandwich. I mean, not that, you know, she didn't appreciate good food.
But she wasn't always a cook, right?
She wasn't always cooking all the time because my grandmother did that, and she was very good at that. And my mother said that she would talk to my grandmother, and my grandmother would tell her how to make some of the dishes that my mother had grown up with. And she wrote them down in this notebook. And when I was working on this book, and I was asking my mother, well, you know, do you remember how Nonna Mary, my grandmother, would make this dish? And she said, well, yes, actually, because I have it written down. And lo and behold, she pulls out this 56-year-old notebook in which she had written down all these recipes. And that was part of what I used to put this book together. And so while I was growing up, we always ate at home. Actually, my father came home for lunch, too, which was pretty much unheard of as far as, you know, the American lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Italy, at that time especially, everything closed down for 3 hours in the middle of the
day
so that people could get together for lunch. And
then take a little siesta afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah. So my father, my parents were living in New York, and my father had a bicycle that he would use to get home quickly so that he could eat lunch with my mother. And I was in school, of course, but dinner was always something that we did together.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
now
so I think I just grew up with, you know, this was the way things were. And I didn't even consider not eating together. And, you know, hearing about, you know, friends of mine who seemed like, you know, every member of the family ate at a different time, just was foreign to me.
Yeah, and it does, I mean, it, unfortunately, it does happen, and sometimes it's unavoidable, but, I mean, even if you bring home a pizza, let's all gather around the table with the pizza and in the box and eat it together, because it's a time for so many important things, obviously.
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't mean that you have to spend hours preparing a meal every time.
Right.
It could be something quick. But on the other hand, cooking also is something that I'm trying to really make sure our daughters are a part of, not just the eating part, but also the preparation of the food.
Right, and that's something that I do want to spend some time talking about during the show today too. And what I want to fill my listeners in on the fact that your father became quite an expert on Italian wines.
Yes,
and he himself
did.
He wrote a book.
Yeah. Quite a few years ago, called Italian Wine. And I think it was one of the first books that really focused on quality Italian wines.
Right. It helped explain differences for me. My husband and I bought that book way back when it came out. And that's always remained a staple on our shelves. Well, you really got into this cooking. We're going to talk about some of your experiences when you were little, to the point where you started giving cooking classes, and then in 2000, you and your wife, Lael, started your own cooking school, right?
Yes. You know, as you mentioned, I was helping my mother out with the cooking school that she opened in Bologna way back when I was 17.
Now, wait, so you were born in New York?
I was born in New York, yes.
And then the family moved back, okay.
When I was like 2.5, my parents moved back to Italy. And then we lived in Italy until I was about 8.5. And at that time, my parents moved again to New York. And from that point on, I pretty much grew up in the States, although I spent every summer vacation in Italy with my grandmother. So I kind of did grow up in both cultures even after.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So you opened the Cooking with Giuliano Hezan at Villa Giona in outside of Verona.
Yes, correct? Yes. I'd always, you know, for quite a few years, I'd been thinking that I wanted to open a school of my own, like similar to what my mother had been running when I was little, well, sort of little. And so I hooked up with a wine producer in Valpolicella, Marilisa Legrini, and an extraordinary villa that she had just become a partner in. And they were doing renovations in it, and it had a space for a great kitchen. And so we decided to offer a week-long course of cooking and wine appreciation and field trips to food producers. And we've been doing it ever since. It's been very successful.
Well, it's interesting you say that you moved back to the States when you were about 8.5. You tell a wonderful story, and I have to tell listeners that this is indeed a cookbook, but it is peppered with wonderful stories about your life and growing up. And you do talk about the difficulties of not matching up with a lot of the other students when it came time to open your lunchbox.
Oh, right, yes. Well, you know, everybody else would bring to school a sandwich or peanut butter and jelly, which to this day I still haven't learned to appreciate, I guess. And my mother instead would make, I don't know, meatballs with rice and tomatoes, or she would make a veal stew, and she would put it in a thermos for me, and I would take it to school. And I would get teased about it. You know, it was rather unusual, and you know, I was having a hard time, adapting, because I'd come in from another country. Italian was my first language, so I was still learning English at that point. So I said, "Oh no, I can't do this." And but then I realized that I couldn't do the school lunches, and I really didn't want to do peanut butter sandwiches either, so that I would, you know, be like the other kids. So I went back to my thermoses, and sometimes she would make me sandwiches, but they were not peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It might be a veal cutlet with, you know, some eggplant and baked tomatoes in it or something like that.
I would have gladly had your lunchbox. Sounds
well,
wonderful.
Yeah, I think people did enjoy tasting my food, and when I would bring it to school afterwards, and the teasing was just an initial thing, it went away.
Well, you have your parents have relatives with interesting background, and all of this adds to, I think, the richness of your cooking traditions. Tell us a little bit about the background of your family background.
Well, my grandparents on my father's side were Sephardic Jews. They were born in Turkey, and they moved to Italy when just after they got married. And my father was then born in Italy. And so they had settled in Italy and were living in Italy and stayed there up until just the beginning of Second World War, when they fled to the U.S. And my grandmother on my mother's side, her family were Italians originally, but her father had moved to Egypt, and so she was born in Lebanon, actually. Hmm. And then grew up in Egypt, and then went back to Italy to visit family, I guess, I don't know, when she was a young woman, and she met my grandfather there and ended up staying. And then my mother was born in Italy because of that. But as I was going back and thinking about the foods that I remembered having from my grandparents' tables, it was very interesting how there was, almost seemed like there was an intersection of recipes, of almost a culinary crossroads, because, you know, both my grandparents, although obviously from different backgrounds, had a, I guess, partly Middle Eastern influences that ended up being very similar. And one good example is a stuffed zucchini, that recipe that I put in the book.
Yes.
It's stuffed with rice and meat. And
both
my
with
grandparents
a wonderful
used
sauce.
To make that in, you know, slightly different ways. And my grandmother on my mother's side used to make these cabbage rolls filled with rice and meat that she called makshi.
Hmm.
So it
you talk about so many of these memories from childhood of your, you know, obviously your parents' meals and your mother cooking and but your grandmother cooking as well. Now, who was the fearless fryer, as you called her?
Oh, that was my mother's mother, my grandmother on my mother's side, and my mother would tell stories about how during the Second World War they were on the Lake of Garda, and if my grandmother was in the middle of frying something, not even air raids would stop her. She would have to make sure she got all the pieces out before she would take cover, and she was an excellent fryer. And my mother learned to fry from her mother, and it's always been one of her specialties, and that's how I learned to fry as well.
And it's, I mean, when you were describing it, I could taste it. If you've never had a perfectly fried whatever piece of meat or vegetable, the way you describe it, it is the perfect fried piece. I mean, we'll go through it. It's light. Oh, it's airy. It's fluffy.
Well, I think a lot of people have a misconception that fried food is always going to be very greasy and heavy. But if fried properly, it's really a wonderful way to cook, because it seals the natural flavors of the food inside with this crispy exterior, and it's almost the purest way of enjoying something when it's very well fried.
Right, right. I mean, it can be messy, yes, but don't be afraid. Be fearless fryer.
It does require some cleanup afterwards. But
well, and you said when your mother, of course, took the baton, as I like to say, you got that from her mother, and she was in the kitchen frying. You had a special task as well.
Well, I would help make the batter that she would use to fry. It was a flour and water batter, very simple, but you had to get just the right consistency. So you would start with water and then add flour and whisk it in with a fork up until you got to just that right consistency, which is kind of like a loose yogurt almost. And so my mother would watch and tell me, you know, a little bit more, and that's just right, and that's how I learned to do it.
So in that sense, you learned by her patience, and obviously that helped make you a very patient teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say, and to what do you credit your talents as a teacher? Because you've been lauded in many different articles about being an excellent teacher. Is it this patience of being a child and learning, you know, step by step?
I guess that was part of it. And, you know, my mother was, still is,
yes,
a very good teacher, because that was, that was originally her profession before she ended up teaching and writing cookbooks.
She was a professor of science or something?
She was a high school teacher. She taught science and biology, and was very gifted at it. And I don't know if you know the story of how she first ended up teaching cooking, but it was as a result of a Chinese cooking class that she had taken in New York. And in talking with the other ladies in the class, they discovered that, you know, she was a teacher. And then, you know, they asked her what kinds of foods she liked to cook at home. And she said, well, you know, normal foods, and started listing the things that she would cook on a regular basis. And when she got home at the end of the course, she found on the back of her recipes a list of names and addresses with the title for Italian cooking lessons. and that's how my mother's food career started, basically.
Well, that's wonderful that you got a nice jump start into that. Well, and we're going to talk more about that when we come back after a short break.
Foods Market, we review each and every product that hits our shelves. Our cleaning products are no exception. Our EcoScale ranking system rates each household cleaner so you know what you're getting. Now, during Earth Month and any time of the year, learn more at WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, welcome back. I'm talking with Giuliano Hezan here on A Taste of the Past. And Giuliano, we were talking about you learning to cook from your mother, patiently instructing you to whisk the batter. You cook with your daughters often, do you not?
Yes, I do. You know, whenever I can, I try to get them involved in preparing our meal. And you know, what's interesting is that when they've had a hand in it, always much more interested and eager to try the foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my two daughters are actually kind of different in terms of their eating habits. My older daughter, from the beginning, has always eaten absolutely everything, and she's never been picky at all. But my younger one is a little bit more, perhaps, like most people's daughters. And so she's been a bit more picky. But whenever she's actually has had a hand in making something, she's really much more interested in it and is much more likely to enjoy it. And so I'll have them, you know, help me prepare the vegetables. They help to stir the risotto. I teach them how to use a knife well so that I know that they're going to be safe. And they really enjoy it, too. And just the act of cooking together is also creates a bond, I think.
Well, certainly. Yeah, certainly. I mean, because you have to fill the time talking. You're close. It's sort of like, that confinement is forced togetherness. So you have to find something to talk about during that time, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives them a lot more respect for the food that they
absolutely
are eating afterwards, you know, rather than just, you know, being called to the table from their computer or whatever and eating and then disappearing.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of talk these days about mindful eating, about, as you just said, the appreciation for your food, looking at it, knowing where it comes from, that appreciation before you just, you know, shove it into your mouth and leave the table. And indeed, helping to cook, even if it's helping to set the table and carry something to the table.
That exactly.
Just, yeah, it gives that extra appreciation. I think that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about when you're teaching classes. Do you teach only in Verona, Italy, or also teach in the United States sometimes? I know a lot of demos and things. But
I only teach in Italy twice a year for usually a couple weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
in the spring and in the fall. But the rest of the time I live in the States, and I travel in the States teaching around the country. In fact, later today I'm leaving on a flight to Seattle for a West Coast tour. And then I also teach at home here I live in Florida, in Sarasota, Florida, and we hold cooking classes in our home that are hands-on classes for small groups. And I have to say, teaching is probably one of the things that I do that I enjoy the most. It gives me maybe the most satisfaction, or at least, you know, immediate satisfaction.
Well, there is certainly a knack to it, and not everybody has that knack. And when I came back from Italy and your mother's books were the only ones that I could find that really gave instruction to prepare food the way that I'd eaten it, obviously her excellence at teaching, the patience with teaching, it translated into writing as well, because the writing, the recipes, the instructions were so, I want to say, relaxed in a way, but very, very clear, very relaxed. And it was a pleasure to cook from the recipes. And I can see now in reading your books that this is something that certainly you have carried on. And the book, you know, it's interesting. I look through the book, and just if you just leaf through and look at the pictures, oh, they're all yummy looking pictures. I guess best word to describe it. It's not what you know, it's not one of these modern Italian cookbooks. Obviously, when you explaining that you found this 56-year-old notebook and started recreating these old recipes, indeed, a lot of these recipes are kind of old style, old school in a way, but mm-hmm. what I say, comfort food. Is that what you would kind of describe them as?
Yes, it's comfort food. It's home cooking. It's not pretentious. You know, I wanted really to write something that would entice people to want to cook at home more, and that was going to make it easy and unintimidating. So that was really kind of my goal in the book. And so that's why the recipes are all very accessible and recognizable in some way. You know, it's something that, I can look at this and I know it's going to make me feel good when I eat it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, it certainly looks that way. And of course, what's nice too is that there are some, as you said, you mentioned the stuffed zucchini with the different meats, almost like a Middle Eastern kind of, you know, taste mm-hmm. and feel on that. Now you've explained why, and that there's so much more to these Italian dishes than pasta. However, Everyone thinks Italian food. They think pasta, pasta, pasta. And there's nothing wrong with that. Is there?
It's still probably my favorite thing to eat.
Yes, yes. Do you have an all-time favorite pasta dish?
Well, yes, actually, it's a dish that my grandmother on my mother's side made, and it is tortelloni. It's square-filled pasta, and she filled it with Swiss chard and ricotta and Parmesan cheese and other things. But it was so incredibly satisfying, and my favorite way to have it was with a butter, onion, and tomato sauce that my mother, I think, has become famous for.
Yes.
That is sweet and just perfect. Very, very comforting. And so when I was little, the story goes that my grandmother a rather large adult portion of these tortelloni, and that I ate the whole thing and then collapsed on the table, making her rather worried because she thought something was wrong with me. And she called the doctor, and at that time, in Italy particularly, they made house calls. He came over, examined me, and said, "Oh, he's perfectly happy. He's sleeping."
Give him enough food, he'll pass out.
But it's still one of my favorite dishes that I like to make, you know, for special occasions, birthdays or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And your students, is there something that they request if they've taken your classes multiple times? Is there anything in particular that students request that they learn
well,
from you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've had students who have taken many classes with me, multiple repeaters. And, you know, ask them, so, you know, is there anything particular that you'd like to have? And amazingly, what they say is, oh, it really doesn't matter at all. Whatever you want to make is fine. And they've gone as far as saying, I don't even care if you repeat the same thing that I've done before.
Interesting.
It's
just learning.
It's very gratifying.
I'm sure. And just, you know, it's just that soul satisfying and having somebody there helping you and guiding you along. That is a wonderful thing to do. And I think getting back to cooking with children, I like to say, how else can we pass the baton or pass these traditions down? You have to involve the children with you. And you had mentioned that so much of what you learned, not necessarily instruction, but maybe even just by osmosis, as you said, just standing in the kitchen while your mother was cooking.
That's true. I mean, often I say, I think that's really kind of how I learned from my mother, just sitting and watching. And it's not that she made me sit there. I enjoyed doing it, and I think I just absorbed, you know, a lot of the intuition and spontaneity and the feeling for the food that she had.
Hmm. Do you have any first taste memories? So much is said about, you know, many of our memories are very poignant. The first memory of anything in particular is so poignant, and taste memories in particular. Do you have a first taste memory?
Well, I think that actually it may sound rather odd, but it was these fresh tomatoes that I had in a salad. It was in Italy, in Arezzo, in the central part of Italy. And I think it had such a strong impression on me because I had never tasted a tomato that had so much flavor. It was rich and sweet in flavor, unlike any tomato that I'd had before. And for a long time, I just associated tomatoes with Arezzo.
Hmm.
But I think that it's also one of the reasons why I like doing a school in Italy, because the flavor of the vegetables that you get in Italy is still unlike what we can experience here. It's different. It must be something about the soil,
the air,
or whatever. Well,
and that's what I wondered. If you had seen food quality or variety change over the years, certainly availability in the United States of certain Italian products has changed. But you really do feel there's just a difference in the taste of the vegetables that are from a fresh farm,
yes. Yeah,
produce.
It's a huge difference. We're lucky we have an organic farm here that is open on weekends, and they grow lettuces and some other vegetables. And, you know, it's really interesting. My daughters can immediately tell when we're having a salad, whether the lettuce came from, you know, Jessica's farm or not, because there really is flavor in it, and it's very different from what you get at a supermarket, which, you know, has traveled, you know, who knows how long and so forth.
Right, right. And that in Italy tastes even better, you feel, right? that could be emotional.
Well, it's
too
different, let's say.
right.
But
well, certainly
there's no doubt that in Italy the vegetables can be associated with a certain town because they have a particular flavor in that town. The peas from Piseggia in the Veneto are famous. They have a particular flavor. The beans, the cranberry beans from Lamon, also are known to have a particular flavor. And or the asparagus from Bassano do Grappa. In Italy, it's quite common for certain towns to be known for a particular vegetable just because it's so special there.
Right. Well, it makes it all, this should be a lesson to everyone, that it's worth it to wait for that farm-grown summer tomato, because there's no taste like it, whether it's from Italy or from a farm in your nearby area.
Or your back garden.
That's right. That's right. You are making me hungry. It's lunchtime. I have to go. Giuliano, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you. And I encourage our listeners to take a look at Hazan Family Favorites. And your mother wrote a beautiful foreword, I might add. That was very loving. And and check out Giuliano's cooking schools at his website, GiulianoHazan.com.
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome. This is Linda Palacio. You've been listening to A Taste of the Past on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.